Welcome to Prison Pipeline on KBOO Portland. I'm Karen James. On February 27th, Partnership for Safety and Justice held its annual Lobby Day in Salem, Oregon. I met with my legislators about justice reinvestment funding for community-based mental health and drug addiction treatment. I also spoke with others about lobbying their legislators about criminal justice reform. I'm here with Andy Coe, Executive Director of Partnership for Safety and Justice, and we're here at the 2020 PSJ Lobby Day. Welcome, Andy.
Thank you.
Tell us about Partnership for Safety and Justice.
Partnership for Safety and Justice, we're a 20-year-old criminal justice reform organization. We approach our work from what we refer to as a holistic point of view. So we're not just thinking about sentencing, we're also thinking about the needs of crime survivors. We're not just thinking about people who are either crime survivors or victims, or the people who have caused harm. We're thinking about their families, about their communities. Our mission, as we describe it, is to transform the criminal justice system through innovative solutions. Solutions are very important to us, based on and to advance equity, accountability, and healing. So that's the way in which we approach our work.
So it's February 27th, and we're here in Salem at Partnership for Safety and Justice Lobby Day 2020. Talk about Lobby Day.
Lobby Day is something we do once a year. And those who are listening may know that Oregon, like some other smaller states, is not a full-time legislature. So we have a biennial system, meaning it's a two-year legislature. We have a short session, which is the even years, rather. So 2020, this year, is a short session. And then odd years are the longer session when the budget's done and many more of the big policy bills are being considered. Usually in short sessions, we don't run big policy bills, usually. Sometimes we will if something is pressing. What we realized when we were doing some planning this year in the prior year is that PSJ has helped lead many kind of enormous policy reforms over the last, over the course of its whole existence, certainly, but certainly over, you know, since 2013 with justice reinvestment and House Bill 3078, which kept the Coffee Creek Women's Prison from expanding into a new facility. And so as we were here over at our Lobby Day, one element of it is an education in a dialogue with our supporters. And that's what we've been doing this morning. And we did see from the Criminal Justice Commission that the impact of legislation that we helped and our supporters helped lead in coalition with partners, both partners who are interested in social justice issues, but also ones who are interested in education, in business, you know, the state economy, so on and so forth, that they've had an enormous impact in heading off what would have been quite large increases in the state prison population, both of adult men and adult women, and has really sort of changed the course of correctional growth in Oregon.
Partnership for Safety and Justice, at Lobby Day, you pull together people from all around the state to come and speak with their legislators. Talk about that.
To be effective, you want to have as much coverage as possible. And legislators normally are most interested in hearing from their own constituents. So by necessity, we try to pull people. But we also, ourselves, we're a statewide organization. We're based in Portland, and Portland is the largest population center in the state. So we tend to focus quite a lot on Portland during the year. But we really do want to develop relationships in every corner of the state. There are many things. For instance, this year, I will say one of the things that we're watching and have been quite engaged in is the proposal to triple the capacity of the Jackson County Jail, which we think would be an enormous mistake and would lead to increases in the number of people sent from Jackson County into the state prison system. So we look across the state in terms of our focus. The criminal justice reforms that were advanced by the Justice Reinvestment Program, of course, affect every county in the state. And many counties in rural areas were very lacking in services, drug treatment services, counseling services, domestic violence services. And it was Justice Reinvestment that made it possible to staff those up. Still a huge deficit in terms of meeting the need, but that's, again, something that we're working on with various coalitions, and in fact, in 2020, there'll be a ballot initiative that should have a great impact, hopefully, if it wins.
And as you said, Andy Coe, Partnership for Safety and Justice was implemental in getting past a lot of wonderful prison reform bills. So this year's theme is Implementation equals impact. So why is implementation of these bills so important?
So implementation is important because just once you've passed any sort of a bill, whether through a ballot measure or through legislation in Salem, that creates the legal structure for some reform to move forward. But until you've actually set up the structure for the ways in which that new bill will and those new reforms will function, as well as get people. So we're talking culture change as well. It's not always just about money. It's not always just about new rules as to how these systems will function. It's also about making sure that the systems and the people that make up the systems start internalizing and normalizing the ways in which reforms are supposed to be working, so that they become the new normal, in a better normal than we currently have. And that's really what we think of when we think of implementation. We also think about making sure that the historically underserved populations and communities that should be benefiting and in fact have a much greater need per capita than the overall population of Oregon, that those communities are not being left behind, because historically that has been the case.
And as you said, this is a short session here down in Salem for 2020, and it will be a longer session in the year 2021, and of course Partnership for Safety and Justice will be here. We'll be talking to our legislators next year also. How can people get involved with Lobby Day here in Salem?
Well, first I would go on our website, because there'll be a little bit of information there, our contact information. So that's safetyandjustice.org, safetyandjustice.org. So it's safety and justice, all one word. You can go on the web, take a look, you know, see what we're about there. And also getting one on one of our mailing lists, which there are various links there to get on our mailing list. And that's usually where we announce the day of our lobby day, the issues that we'll be working on. And the whole website in general is a good opportunity for people to get to know us and the work that we've done in the past and what we're considering for the future.
Andy Coe, Executive Director of Partnership for Safety and Justice, thank you so much.
Thank you, Karen.
I'm here with Oregon Representative Tana Sanchez. Welcome.
Thank you.
So you're here at PSJ's 2020 Lobby Day. Why are you here?
Because PSJ makes change and shift in things, and they are some folks who are really like bringing the agenda forward, the things that we need to talk about here in this state that really identify how do we do criminal justice differently, how do we do resource distribution differently, how do we make shift and change in the way we're doing business here in the state of Oregon.
And what are some of those changes that you see or would like to see?
Well, they were, of course, pushing the House Bill 3064, I believe is the number, which was to change the way that grant distribution happened in counties for criminal justice reinvestment monies. And that was a really important bill, in my opinion. It made sense to shift the way we did that, because we had a couple of counties that were not actually doing that justice reinvestment in a way that made sense. They weren't making sure that the numbers of people going to prison was being brought down. They weren't adjusting their workload to really shift that number. They were continuing to do business as usual, and we need to make sure that that doesn't happen. We want to make sure that we really look at why we have people in prison and what brought them there. How do we change that? What needs to happen on the front end to make sure that we don't spend $1.9 billion a biennium on our Department of Corrections?
And you just said a few words about anthropology. Talk about that a little bit.
So I mentioned upstairs when we were talking that if you look at from an anthropological perspective, you cannot see any structure that looked like a prison here in the United States prior to European engagement. And that says that traditional Native communities did things like holding people accountable in a different way. We did things like restorative justice. That's not a new concept. That's a very, very old concept of how you deal with family and community who have been affected by a crime. If someone committed a crime, they were held accountable not by a court, but by larger populations of people who were literally affected. And those people actually got to say, how do I want this to be dealt with? So there are other ways to do it. I mean, some of them are a little harsher than most. You know, there were incidences here in the Northwest, as a matter of fact, where people were essentially removed from societies. We know that traditionally, if someone did something very inappropriate to a family member, a community member, oftentimes they were ostracized. Of course, back in those days, you had to figure out how to live by yourself, because it wasn't easy, right? You needed community to live. Now it's a little bit different. We still have to figure out how do we, we're kind of doing that in a way, but it doesn't help that we're then costing us a lot of money by putting people in prison.
So what are you hoping comes from today's PSJ Lobby Day?
Well, I think anytime people lobby and come to the Capitol and say what they feel and think and want to have happen, it does make a difference in how people respond. I think today, of course, given that the Republicans are not in the building, it might, you know, it will not have the impact on them that I would have hoped for. However, I want us to make the news that people are still showing up and that business is still happening and that we need to make sure that one situation like that cannot slow down democracy. It shouldn't slow down democracy. These people's voices need to be heard. And the fact that they're here saying we have to do this differently, we need to invest in front-end pieces of work, that we need to make sure that our domestic violence services are fully funded in a way that helps victims of domestic violence all over this state, not just in the metro area, not just in a particular area, but everywhere, that justice happens all over the state. That makes a difference.
Representative Sanchez, thank you so much.
Thank you.
So I'm here with Paul Solomon. Paul, tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do down in the Eugene area.
Thanks, Karen. My name is Paul Solomon. I'm the executive director at Sponsors, a reentry program in Lane County. And I am here today because I'm a huge supporter of the Partnership for Safety and Justice. And today is an important day when we get to come together and lobby around all of the issues that are important to PSJ, and to those of us who are doing work on the ground to create opportunities for people with criminal histories as they reenter the community.
Tell us a little bit more about Sponsors.
Sponsors is a nonprofit that's been providing reentry services in Lane County since 1973. We operate 20 buildings on 6 sites with over 220 units of transitional and permanent housing for people with conviction histories. We also operate an employment program. We have a very robust mentoring program with volunteer and peer mentors. We provide mental health services. We have programs for women and children, programs for people convicted of sex crimes, programs for veterans. And most recently, we've really been increasing the stock of permanent supportive housing that we have.
Today in Salem, we're talking to our legislators about justice reinvestment. How have the justice reinvestment dollars helped your work in Lane County?
Great question. Sponsors has received a significant amount of justice reinvestment dollars, over $1 million per biennium, that helps fund a range of reentry programs. So we recognize the critical importance of these dollars. One of the things that we've been able to do is help fund a number of housing programs, mentoring programs, but these dollars really help us move the dial around reducing recidivism and reducing our county's dependence on prison beds.
And Paul, what will you be talking to your legislators about today at Lobby Day?
So today we have the opportunity to talk to our legislators about the work that they've done in the past, thanking them for passing the Justice Reinvestment Equity and Accountability Act, and then also to talk more specifically about funding ODSVS, the Oregon Domestic and Sexual Violence Services Fund, and Justice Reinvestment. We know that these dollars are critically important to those organizations that are doing the work on the ground, and we need to remind our legislators how important it is to continue to fund these vitally important programs. Historically, we have had to fight every session to get ODSVS and Justice Reinvestment fully funded.
You've been a major part of PSJ. You've been on PSJ's board and have done some wonderful work with PSJ. So do you want to say a few words about that?
Yes, I am a huge fan of the Partnership for Safety and Justice. I served on their board for about 10 years, during which time I got to really get a firsthand look at the myriad ways that they are able to bring together people impacted by the criminal justice system, those who've spent time in the system, and those who have been impacted as survivors in the system. And the model is really unique. They really have taken a holistic approach to reducing our reliance on prison as the sole tool that we have in our criminal justice system.
Paul Solomon, thank you so much.
Thanks, Karen.
So I'm here with
Babak Zulfagar-Yazar.
And Babak, why are you here at PSJ's Lobby Day today?
I'm a huge supporter of PSJ's Lobby Day as a board member and as a social activist in the community working for POIC as a family care manager. PSJ's Lobby Day is very influential and helping shape policy because people are here sharing their stories and their experiences and seeing that it makes a difference.
And talk about some of your work in the community.
Big piece of my work working with gang-impacted African-American youth on probation in Multnomah County is helping guide families with their goals, whether it's around school, employment, emotional health, things of that nature, but then also elevating their stories to be able to make a difference in their community.
And what do you plan to tell your legislators here in Salem today?
Definitely like to talk about Senate Bill 1573, which is in the short session right now. It's related to juvenile expungement process. And oftentimes, you know, in the course of someone finishing their probation and moving forward with their lives, there's a record that follows them into their young adulthood. And unless you remember that it's been X number of years and you're now eligible, then you're not going to know to expunge your record, right? And you'll find out at a job interview that you didn't get hired because you've got, you know, something on your record. So making an automatic process in each county through the juvenile department and allowing people to actually see that there are people working in their interest to try to help alleviate barriers to employment, to housing, right, is actually really something that inspires me.
So I understand expunging your record is pretty difficult and complicated. How would this bill work? How would it help or reduce that complication?
Well, it would make it automatic, so there would actually be someone in each county who keeps track of everyone's records and sees when someone's actually eligible for an expungement. And I believe a letter would be sent out to that individual showing that, hey, you are now eligible for an expungement. You're able to go to court and handle that matter. So with that, again, if I had a record and I got that letter and saw that it was something that was automatic, I'd really feel like hope in the system and in the process to see that it's working, again, in my interest.
And Babak, talk about why that is important for a 25-year-old, say, coming out of prison. They've served their time and this record still follows them. Why would that be important to someone who was sentenced as a youth and now their life has changed? Talk about that.
Fresh start, right? You've finished your sentence, you can move forward, time has passed, you're ready to be part of the community, but to have barriers to what that looks like in terms of education, employment, where you live, what kind of work you can do, to be able to have a fresh start and have hope that I've taken accountability for what I've done and the community recognizes that I've taken accountability is something that can really help elevate someone for the rest of their lives.
Hi, my name is Claire Barrera. I am here with El Programa Hispano, which is a culturally specific organization based in Gresham. And we provide domestic and sexual violence services, particularly for the Latinx community. I'm here today because I'm passionate about making sure that funding for survivors of violence goes to culturally specific communities so that we can determine for ourselves how we define safety, justice, and healing. I think it's really important that we continue to support funding for culturally specific organizations and make sure that funding is flexible so that organizations can really ask their community how they want to be served and how they want to heal.
And what are some of the specific issues facing your community?
There's a lot of issues. Certainly right now, one of the biggest issues is immigration-related issues because of, you know, the rash of xenophobic and racist laws that we've had for a long time, but increasingly in the last few years. Our community is less likely to come forward when domestic and sexual violence are happening because of fear that they'll be deported. So that's one big issue. Another big issue is housing. You know, in the Portland area, there's a huge housing crisis, and it's even more difficult for communities of color who get discriminated against in housing to find safe and stable housing. And when you're not documented, it's hard to find a good income that can help you pay for that housing.
Talk about funding for these programs and what you'll be talking to your legislator today about increased funding for your programs.
Yeah, we get a pretty big mix of federal, state, and county and city-specific funding, which is wonderful, and we're really grateful for the funding we get. But one problem is that continuously funding has not gone up with the cost of living, and so advocates really cannot make a living wage doing the work that they're doing, which is really challenging. And programs like our organization have a really difficult time covering all our overhead with the amount of funding that we're given. And so the things that I want to highlight today are, A, let's make sure that we're still prioritizing funding for culturally specific organizations, because that's where the resources have been scarce for a long time, despite the fact that our communities have higher needs and barriers. And let's make sure that we're prioritizing that funding be in line with the cost of living in each county these days.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
So I'm here with Patty Katz. You were here helping Partnership for Safety and Justice put on this wonderful Lobby Day event today. Is that correct?
Right. And there were about 125 members that showed up to go visit their legislators.
Tell us what you're involved with these days.
I'm collecting stories of people in recovery. If anybody wants to get a hold of me.
And how do they get in touch with you?
PATTY_KATZ@MSN.com.
Perfect. You are working on something for the women at Coffee Creek Correctional Facility. Tell us about that.
Well, there's a lot of people that still have to see the board, the parole board. If you have been convicted before November 1st, 1989, you have to see the board before you leave. And at the men's prison at OSP, we have something that is, we do imitation parole board, mock parole board hearings, and we're going to start doing that with the women to prepare them to see the board before they get there and get scared, and we're just going to try to make that a smoother transaction for them.
Boy, that sounds like a daunting, scary procedure that these women have to go through. And how does it work at the men's prison? Now, which prison is this happening at? How does that work?
Oregon Cure goes in, and we meet with people quite often and go to different functions. And we were chatting, and we were starting to go to the parole board hearings and see what was going on and how we could maybe talk to the guys about how to best prepare for a hearing. And I got to watching the people in their groups in the prison. They were open and honest, and words were flowing, and they had personality in their voice. And when they got to the parole board, they didn't know what to do. They wanted to impress the parole board with everything they've done, and they didn't really hit all the highs. And it wasn't, I don't want to say practiced, but it wasn't a true representation of what they had done in the last 20 or 30 years.
You're saying that when they get to the parole board, they just freeze up and they don't really truly give the parole board an understanding of who they've become.
That's very, very true. And, you know, Karen, I have to tell you that I've lived in prison and I visit prisons and I'm a volunteer and I'm cleared to go into four prisons in Oregon. And out of all the people that I have served time with and been involved in different groups in the prison, I would say maybe there were, out of the 1,000 people I met, maybe 3 people that I wouldn't feel safe with on the outside. There's some good people in there that did some bad things. And, you know, when I was learning child development, I learned that if you put a child in timeout for 1 minute for every year they are, that's plenty of time for a child. So, you know, 20 years, 30-year sentences, you know, if it's really Department of Corrections, why do we treat people like it's Department of Staying the Same? The more programs we have, the more outside contact people have, the more successful they get to be in prison, and if they ever get an opportunity to leave.
So, Patty, you said you were inside yourself. You did serve time. Did you have to go before a parole board, and what was that like for you?
Well, I went twice to a parole board. I went to prison a lot because I was a drug addict, and I couldn't stop committing crime or doing dope, so I just kept going back. But once I went to a two-man board, and that was a little bit easier. That was right at my prison OWCC. But the next time I had to go to a five-man board over at OSCI, at one of the men's prisons, and we were shackled on and belly chained on the way over there. And then we got inside the prison where the doors were all clanked shut. And then I had to see the five-man board. And so I have 14 felonies and I have 27 parole violations. And they thought that I was being totally out of line for getting out of jail or prison and doing drugs. But I never really went to drug and alcohol treatment while I was in prison. So that's one more thing, Department of Corrections or Department of Staying the Same. So when we just warehouse people without doing any corrective measures, we're really doing the community a disservice, and we're doing the people that live in prison a disservice.
So I know you're involved with another major event that occurs annually here in Oregon. Talk about that.
Well, I'll start at the way beginning, and I might cry because my co-partner in this, she passed away 2 months ago, Louise Wedge. If anybody's listening from the old street days, her name was Zodia, but she and I were under the Burnside Bridge one day, and we did some drugs that made us kind of paranoid. So when we both got into recovery, she got into recovery 3 years before I did, but I was working at Hooper Detox, and so was she. I was washing laundry, and she was a drug and alcohol counselor. We were looking on the internet, and we heard something called National Recovery Month, and we wondered what that meant. It was people who were in recovery celebrating publicly. And so we thought, oh my gosh, we can step out of the box of anonymity, but we can let the public know that people like Louise and I do recover. The first year we were going to stand on the Burnside Bridge and just give thanks that we were no longer under the bridge. And some people wanted to come along, and some people in Washington wanted to come because I lived there. And we stood on the I-5 bridge, and we had about 48 people the first year. But last year was our 19th year, so it's called Hands Across the Bridge. It's on Labor Day. We have park permits, and we meet with the fire department. Legislators show up. They speak with us. We have CEOs of different nonprofits, and then we have personal story. Just a whole lot of things that people like us, who used to be under the bridge shooting dope, have learned how to work in the community as a partner.
How do people find out more about Hands Across the Bridge?
Contact me at patty_katz@msn.com. We have a website. It's called handsacrossthebridge.org. And then we have a Facebook page called Hands Across the Bridge Project.
Patty Katz, thank you.
Thank you, Karen.
This is Prison Pipeline on KBOO 90.7 FM, Portland. You have been listening to Voices from Partnership for Safety and Justice Lobby Day 2020 in Salem, Oregon.